Cobra Kai never dies. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, we are continuing our journey to Karate Kid Legends with our review of the Karate Kid Part 3, the finale to the original trilogy of Karate Kid films. And joining me here today for this review, making his debut here in the dojo, he's from Systematic Geekology, one of the priests of the geeks over there, TJ Blackwell. Tejas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It is an honor and a privilege to have someone that Joshua Knoll constantly puts over as the greatest thing to ever happen to podcasting to be here in the dojo with me. TJ, here on the show, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Do you feel up to the challenge?
I think I can get that done.
You know what? You are, of all the guests, you're the one I've had the most confidence in to hit that goal. Will, not so much. But you, I do have that confidence that we can hit those marks here today. Speaking of Pastor Will, he was on the last review talking about the Karate Kid Part 2. And at the end of the review, he mentioned that after that movie, it's all downhill after that. So we all know what is coming up with the next Karate Kid and then Jackie Chan's Karate Kid. But TJ, do you think that starting here with the Karate Kid Part 3, is it all downhill? Are we starting the downward spiral here?
I do think this starts the downward spiral. I don't think it's just like a normal spiral, though. I do think the Jackie Chan Karate Kid is better than this one.
Okay. It's been a while since I've seen, I think I've only seen the Jackie Chan one once. Obviously, I'm going to have to watch it again here pretty soon. I actually enjoyed the next Karate Kid. That one's that review is next week with Christian Ashley, so I'll hold all my thoughts on that for that review. But yeah, it's, to me, the first two movies are so good that it really is a very high bar to try and get to those two movies anyway. This one does not. It has its moments. This is kind of like, what's the one Star Wars that everybody loves to hate? The Last Jedi. It's kind of like The Last Jedi, where like there's some things here that work, and then there's things but like the execution is just really bad all throughout.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been possible for them to match Karate Kid 1 and 2 here. It would have been really difficult if possible, but there's something here. Karate Kid 3 is like, to me, this is sort of what I think of when I think of an 80s action movie. It's not good, but it could be fun to watch, you know? And there is a lot there for, you know, I wouldn't say everybody, but for the Karate Kid franchise enjoyer, there's a lot there. They introduce a new villain that a lot of people did not like, which is fair. They kind of up the scale of, you know, the villainy in the movie. They go straight for the big bucks, like, yep, rich, super evil, for no real reason. But there's, you know, I have to respect it. It's the real sense of camaraderie that Silver brings that I do have to respect, because for him, his entire investment is just that they messed up my boy. They messed up my dog, and I'm not going to let that fly. So, you know, I think he has his redeeming qualities.
I totally agree with you on all of that. There is this aspect of Terry Silver being like the ultimate big boss, the final boss of the Karate Kid franchise. And yet at the same time, he is such a 80 or cartoony mustache twirling villain, just like, especially when they first introduce him, like you said, for no apparent reason, this guy is filthy, stinking rich, has a gnarly, just ponytail, just so 80s with the really long jet black ponytail. He's like, and his money is made in like nuclear waste. Like he cleans up and gets rid of nuclear waste. So this guy is like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, but not 1,000 years old. And it's, yeah. And you're right. Like the whole premise of his involvement and this amazing lengths that he goes to in this movie is all because John Kreese, the Cobra Kai, lost in the All Valley tournament. John Kreese has been, he's been like, I'm not proven a fraud, but like, you know, not very illegitimate. And now he wants revenge. He says it 70 times there in the first 5 minutes of the movie. It is time for revenge on Daniel and Mr. Miyagi. And it's just so... Once the movie gets going, it is a little bit better, especially once they start the whole charade. And I do really like this idea of, like, Daniel crossing over to the dark side kind of thing and joining Cobra Kai because he thinks Mr. Miyagi can't get him over the edge to take on karate's bad boy, Mike Barnes. I think this fight at the end of the movie is one of the best in the Karate Kid franchise.
I agree with that. And I think what it's the first two, it's a lot more realistic. I am 25. The Jackie Chan Karate Kid came out in 2008. I was 8 or 9 when it came out. So to me, you know, the end fight in that movie, that's peak. It's over the top. It's awesome. Yeah, whatever, man. Do a whole flip. That was completely necessary. Jaden Smith, thank you. But up to this point, I do think this is the most entertaining fight in the series. So it's not that bad. It's not as bad as people make it out to be.
It's not. My only critique of that final fight between Daniel and Mike is that for as much as unrealistic as the crane kick is, in the sudden death final round of a tournament, you're going to pull out a kata. Okay, we're really suspending a lot of belief here in order. Because even Terry Silver's like, get the point. Just punch him in the gut or something. And, you know, Daniel wins. I mean, it works. But, like, that you do have to suspend a lot of belief there. That
yeah.
Mike is, he's just, like, confused. Like, what is going on? Even though he's been so hyper-aggressive throughout the rest of the movie, even.
Yeah. And it's yeah. like, I mean, a kata is not something you do in a tournament. It's, if you're not a martial artist and you're listening to this, katas are something you learn early. You learn, you know, you do them to, you know, keep your form correct. But, well, I mean, it's just interesting to me that Karate Kid 3 is where they're like, yeah, let's do the katas now.
So that's actually a pretty good point. Something I wanted to bring up here. As much as I like the first and second movie, especially the story of the second movie and all this like world building that they do, bringing us into the life of Mr. Miyagi, I think the storylines of the second and third movie should be flipped. I think the second movie should be, we're going to run it back. Daniel's going to defend his title. And then the third movie is going to be, now we are going to travel to Okinawa and learn all this backstory of Mr. Miyagi. Maybe even to the point of having this big emotional finish in the third movie of Mr. Miyagi deciding to stay in Okinawa, or maybe Daniel deciding to stay with him and they start teaching Miyagi-Do karate there in Okinawa. Some kind of like emotional punch, because for this trilogy, this movie does just kind of end like any other movie. There's no like, oh man, like some big emotional send-off. It's just Daniel wins, Mr. Miyagi wink, and roll credits.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is a good way to end the movie, but it's not a good way to end a trilogy. I think if they didn't do your idea, which is good. I think what they should have done is Karate Kid 1 is about Daniel, of course. Karate Kid 2, Miyagi. Karate Kid 3 should have been about Cobra Kai.
Okay, so still kind of in the a little bit of what's going on here, but maybe you get to find out what's been going on with Johnny Lawrence this whole time or something.
Yeah, it should have been about Johnny Lawrence or Kreese. But it would have made more sense to have, you know, our antagonist be the focus of the third movie, since we did both protagonists in order. To me, that makes the most sense. I think it would have been a better product than Karate Kid 3, but it didn't happen. And eventually we got Cobra Kai, the show, which
right,
I think gives a lot more credit to Karate Kid 3.
You know? Yes, because I know that Silver does become like one of the main focus antagonists of that series. So yeah. It's funny because at different points throughout this journey to the next movie, there's been these conversations of like, what if they would have changed this or done it this way? No matter what you change in the movies, Cobra Kai is drastically affected by it. Like it is, mm-hmm. It might even cease to exist in some cases.
Yeah. And like here, Karate Kid 3, we don't find out until Cobra Kai that the Cobra Kai dojo got banned from all events forever because of Karate Kid 3, which adds a little bit of closure to the movie, at least.
A little bit. It does add a little bit of closure. I can't believe how many times Mike got away with kicking or punching Daniel in the dick during that final fight. I was like in my sparring experience, it's like 2 in one match and you're out. You're disqualified.
Yeah.
Like,
I think at some point the movie affected that. If you couldn't already get disqualified for too many illegal strikes, someone watched Karate Kid 3 and was like, all right, so this is a problem. But what a hilarious strategy. Just win a point, illegal strike. Win a point, illegal strike.
That's right.
Just beat him up.
And like not even trying to hide it a little bit. No. You know? Like, oh, accidental, my bad. No, like just very blatantly, just right in the balls over and over again.
An actual villain. And I've seen a lot of people, you know, complaining about the movie, and they're like, oh, it's not like Daniel to get scared like that. He wouldn't try to quit. You kick me in the balls 11 times. I'm going to quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm going to want to stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do want to talk a little bit, though, about the fear factor of Daniel in this movie. Overcoming fear is a big part of the Karate Kid narrative, but this is one of those. This is another example of why I think the stories of 2 and 3 should be flipped, because in the third movie, the whole, you know, the big metaphor with the bonsai tree is that it is time for Daniel to start branching out and be his own person. And he has because he has this really good root, like a bonsai tree. That's what Miyagi keeps saying. Daniel then proceeds to go throughout the whole movie making all the wrong decisions. There's never a decision that Daniel makes that is correct. They're all the wrong decisions, which is fine. He's literally going into college. So he's entering that phase of life of becoming your own person, becoming your own adult. My problem with that, though, is that in the second movie, Daniel is so mature, calm, focused. There's even a scene in the second one where Daniel is imparting wisdom to Mr. Miyagi, which is usually, you know, in these kinds of stories, in these movies, that's usually a sign of the pupil has progressed, the student has progressed above and beyond what the teacher could ever hope for. So you have Karate Kid, Daniel is learning the ways of Miyagi-Do Karate. Second movie, super mature, he's got it all together. Third movie, it is all out the window. So I do think if you flip those two things, that does make the movie and the overall story better. All that to say, though, if I'm getting hit in the crotch 11 times in one match, I am going to be terrified.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be scared. But if they flip the order, I'm not sure if Karateka 2 would have come out as 3.
What do you mean by that?
I don't think Karate Kid 3 would have performed well enough to move to 3.
Gotcha. If the third movie was the story of the second movie, we may never have gotten to Daniel and Miyagi going to Okinawa. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Because it took a while for... When did Karate Kid 4 come out?
The next Karate Kid came out in 94. So this movie came out in 89. So it was another, 5-6 years before you get to the next Karate Kid?
I mean, they probably could have still gotten through it. And then they might not have had to make Karate Kid 4.
True. True. And we're still trying to figure out the Jackie Chan Karate Kid. But don't worry, the new movie is going to fix it. The new movie is going to fix everything. We promise. We hope, at least.
I just... See, my personal favorite Karate Kid movie is Balls of Fury. That's a different conversation. But I definitely think this one gets overhated. And if it's been a while since you've watched it, you should.
Like TJ said back at the beginning of this, if you're just looking for that like very standard 80s action movie, this one is the one that really checks a lot of those boxes. The other two are very much that 80s teen coming of age film. You don't really have that here. He has a very platonic relationship with a girl because they wrote off Kimiko in the first 5 minutes, like how they wrote off Allie in the first 5 minutes. So if you are just looking for like that good old fashioned 80s action flick, this movie is definitely more for that. And there's some pretty good action all throughout. Terry Silver, yeah, he's over the top, but like in the real world, he's probably like the most well-trained martial artist. Him and John Kreese, of all people, the two bad guys are the ones in the real world who are like the two most well-trained martial artists of the main characters. And it definitely shows. It's also very obvious that it's not karate that that Terry Silver is doing. That is Taekwondo 100%.
Yeah. But man, he does put hands on people.
He does. The fight between him, Kreese, and Mr. Miyagi at the Cobra Kai Dojo, that is also a pretty good fight. That is, it's nice that in every one of these movies, we get a little blip of Mr. Miyagi beating up teenagers and beating up grown adults who deserve it. They always deserve it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Those moments are the only moments to me where Karate Kid really feels like a kung fu movie, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is, but it's not anything crazy. Like, it's not a Bruce Lee film. It's not... You're going to see some real crazy martial arts and real battles here, but they're so good. They're better, like content wise, than most of those other movies.
It's very grounded. It's very real world. Again, in the tournament stuff, you have the crane kick and the kata. Those aside, like the street fight scene in the first Karate Kid movie, when Mr. Miyagi's beating up the Cobra Kai kids all in their Halloween costumes, everything. And then here in this one, same kind of thing. Like, it's very grounded as opposed to like a Jet Li movie that's going to have wire work and giant spear swords waving around and all that. And I think you can appreciate and enjoy both, personally, for me, like, wire work isn't my favorite, but every once in a while, like, yeah, I want a Jet Li flying across the room with the sword. Like, you like Jet Li, awesome. Right? That's like your guy, isn't it?
Jet Li.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Like, I'm a big wire work fan. I think it's fun.
We'll have to have you back. TJ and I were doing, I was on an episode of Systematic Geekology, and TJ brought up that his your all-time favorite or one of your all-time favorite?
It's definitely up there.
Kung Fu movies is the very controversial Forbidden Kingdom with Jackie Chan and Jet Li. So we'll have to have you back here pretty soon to talk about that one, because it's fun. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's a fun one. And I just remember all the hype about Jackie Chan and Jet Li finally being in a movie together. And that's just gold right there, you know?
It is, and it was. And a lot of people don't agree.
A lot of people don't agree. I like how this line I opened the show with is so prophetic. Cobra Kai never dies. Because we thought it did. Because this is the last time we see anything of Cobra Kai until decades later with the TV series, with the YouTube Netflix series. Cobra Kai is not in the next Karate Kid or Jackie Chan's Karate Kid. And it's just so prophetic of like, yeah, this is, we're coming back to this. They didn't know it in 1989, but nostalgia won.
Mm-hmm. Nostalgia won. And what a success story.
It did.
Episode, but man, that's crazy for a show to go from YouTube to Netflix to being wildly successful.
Wildly successful. Yeah, does everybody remember that brief period of time when YouTube was going to have a streaming service, even though their whole thing is streaming videos anyway? And then Netflix picks it up, which usually is a recipe for disaster when Netflix picks up a show that got canceled. And it's like one of the hottest programs that Netflix has ever produced.
Yep. I bet HBO was kicking their teeth when they you know, saw how popular Cobra Kai was getting.
Oh, I bet. It's also interesting. I should probably bring this up. Back when this journey started in January, I mentioned how all of these movies were on Netflix behind the ad-free paywall. That has changed a lot, and it's weird now. Karate Kid, The Next Karate Kid, Jackie Chan's Karate Kid are all only available to rent or buy. So Apple TV Plus, Prime Video, all those places where you buy or rent films. Karate Kid Part 2 and this one, Karate Kid Part 3, Hulu.
Or Tubi.
Which also means by extension, Disney Plus, depending on what version you pay for and all of that. Yeah. So I'm interested to see if when the Karate Kid Legends comes out, if they all are going to end up in one place. So that way Sony can make as much money as possible on these. Because Sony doesn't have a streaming thing. They never got in.
Nope. I feel like what's most likely is they're going to end up on like Peacock or Paramount Plus or something.
I was kind of thinking Paramount Plus. I don't know why, but that just seemed to be the right vibe for their content. Yeah, I think it's so interesting. They were the one, and it's not for a lack of content. They own Columbia Pictures. Like if you look at that film catalog, they could put every Spider-Man project ever on their streaming service.
Yeah, Sony just hates money, I think.
I mean, nobody watched Kraven the Hunter, so maybe they do. Maybe they do just hate making money.
So they hate it. They hate it so much because they could just be, supply issues, mess up their consoles, and to them, which I get it. If I owned a business, it would probably be more like Sony than something else. I wouldn't be trying to get into everything and
sure,
you know, make a quadrillion dollars. They're Sony. They make enough money.
Right.
So I do get it.
Yeah.
It's just weird to see.
They hate money, and yet they're like bad capitalists. They're good at making money as it is, but they're like also happy. Like you're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to always want more. Like Terry Silver.
They're content, and that's the problem.
That's the problem. All right, TJ. Any other thoughts here on The Karate Kid Part 3 as we start to draw things to a close?
I do seriously think that if it's your least favorite Karate Kid movie, that's fine. But if you think it's just a bad film, you should watch it again. Because
yeah,
I wouldn't say it's a good film. But it's not that bad. It's not a 3 out of 10, like people like to say. Like Roger Ebert liked to say.
Yeah.
And yeah, both Arvidsson and Ralph Macchio had some pretty negative things to say about the movie. But at the end of the day, it's still a fun watch. It's still mm-hmm. part of the Karate Kid franchise, and it's still worth watching every once in a while.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. It's definitely, you can find a truly worse movie. There's some on the way in this mm-hmm. franchise, but you could easily find like a worse movie to watch. But it is actually a pretty good, you know, turn off your brain, just kind of put it on in the background kind of film. Yep. The other ones I feel very invested in. This one is a little bit more, it's good background noise.
Yeah, I can't argue against that. Yeah, that is the perfect description. Because watch, the best thing about Karate Kid 3, you know, despite its, you know, slightly redeeming qualities, the best thing it has going for it is that it makes you want to watch Karate Kid 1.
True. All right. Well, thank you, TJ, for taking the time to be on today's episode. Listeners, you can find TJ on several different Anazao Ministries podcast network shows, Systematicology, the Whole Church podcast. We'll link to those in the description of this episode. Follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY. Get the reviews early before everyone else does here on the episode. And check out the YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture. Checks the time. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where we have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less. He is the man. Has served up some wisdom one slice at a time. See y'all next time.